Welcome everyone for attending this week's W3C CCG meeting. Today we're very pleased to have Alex and Encore from Check to provide an update on DID Link resources, one of our W3C CCG work items. But before we start, just want to quickly run through the administrative items. First of all, just a quick reminder on the code of ethics and professional conduct. I just want to make sure we have constructive and respectful conversations here. Next, a quick note on the intellectual property. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be member of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. If you have any questions in regards to that or having a W3C account, please contact any of the co-chairs. These meetings are being automatically recorded and transcribed. So we use GG Chat to queue the speakers during the call. So type in a Q plus to add yourself to the queue or Q minus to remove. You can type in Q question mark to see who is in the queue. We will try to publish the meeting minutes, audio and video recordings in the next 24 to 48 hours. All right, I think I just want to take a quick moment for the introductions and reintroductions. So if you're new to the community or you haven't been active and want to re-engage, please feel free to just unmute. You don't have to type in Q plus or anything. All right, next. Announcements and reminders. Any announcements or reminders? A quick preview of what's coming. So today we're going to talk about the DID link resources, and next week we'll have Gregory and Joni from DIACC from Canada to talk about Pan-Canadian Trust Framework. And then the week following we'll have Greg to do a follow-up on the anonymous holder binding, a great session that we had about 2 months ago. And then I'll try to, I think there's a great email thread around the proof of personhood. So I'll try to schedule that conversation in the next 2 months, as well as the proof of humanity, one of the projects in DIF. All right, any other announcements and or reminders? All right, one more announcement and is that on September 24th, there's a W3C TPAC week, and a lot of people won't be there here today. So on that day, sorry. So we'll cancel the CCG meeting on September 24th. And then the October 29th is the Internet Identity Workshop IIW. So we'll cancel that session as well on the October 29th. All right, Kalia.
Hi, so that's what I was going to share about. We have the Internet Identity Workshop coming up. I think early bird pricing is still around for another week or so. And the DID on Conference Africa is the same week as TPAC. If you know folks in the region, please let them know about it. It looks like it's going to be fun. Apparently, our local hosts have been on television and everything. Sharing about it coming to TAN. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Clea. Any other announcements or reminders? All right, next, work items. A quick update on the work items. So Isaiah, who's actually leading the verifiable issuers and verifiers, wasn't able to attend last week, but he actually sent out an update. So they're working on a data model for issuers list and planning to publish the first version by the end of October. So I'll try to work with him and have him come to speak about that version, the first version of verifiable issuers and verifiers, sometime in November or December. Any other work item updates? And by the way, I updated the work items deck with that update in the link that I just shared. All right, cool. So let's get to the main agenda. So again, we're very, very happy to have Alex and Ankur here to talk about the DID Link resources. So Alex, the floor is yours.
Great. I think it's just me at the moment. Ankur will jump in about 5 minutes or so. But yeah, let's kick off. I'll put this into slideshow mode as well. So I'll give a bit of context on what DID linked resources are. I think that some people on the call will have a broad understanding of what they can do. Others will be completely new to the space. So I think we'll start from basics and then we can get into some of the complexity later on. For a bit of context, we've been working on this DID linked resource standard for about 2 years now. And last year we started writing the draft spec at W3C, and that's got to a sort of V0.1 state now where we'd love to have some contributions, but I'll get into that later in the presentation. So I'm going to run through what DID linked resources are, what applications there are at the moment in the real world, what problems DID linked resources solve, and their applications. So I guess the first question that I want to ask as a sort of rhetorical question is, why are resources needed in digital identity? And this kind of leads on to what resources are in this context. And sort of in a nutshell, a resource can be any structured file stored on ledger or off ledger. This actually, I should certainly update that to say off ledger as well, within a specific syntax. So in decentralized identities specifically, we often use things like schemas, status lists, trust registries as sort of files that we associate with decentralized identifiers and verifiable credentials. But the actual ways that these files are stored is often quite varied. So, for example, schemas are a really good example of a resource. They're used to describe the attributes within a verifiable credential in a machine-readable format. And, you know, prominent examples of where schemas are stored are schema.org, which is probably the most common one. Then there's other sort of alternatives, such as, you know, the Hyperledger Indie community, which uses on-ledger schemas. And schemas are naturally used in identity documents and VCs, and they become increasingly important when we're talking about verifying a credential, because you need to be able to match that the actual credential you're being presented sort of conforms to the schema that is referenced in the credential. So, you know, in an example, one example is, you know, here on the left-hand side, we have a schema issued, or a driver's license issued in 2012. And on the right-hand side, we have one in 2015. And what you can see is some of the attributes within the one in 2015 have been updated. But because both of these driver's licenses are still, you know, valid, you know, there's an overlap in terms of when they are both valid, verifying applications will need to be able to discern or be able to verify both of these schemas at the same time. So we need a way to be able to update these types of resources without one being sort of deprecated or one sort of resulting in an error. So here you can see just a quick glance that some of these attributes on the right have been updated. So this one includes height, weight, and eyes, whereas the one on the left does not include height, weight, and eyes. And we need to make sure that the one on issued in 2015 doesn't invalidate the one issued in 2012. So both of these should still be high level of assurance schemas. And this is a problem for apps in the real world, specifically with regards to verifying credentials. And we've all encountered, you know, computer says no challenges in this context. And if we don't learn from sort of the mistakes of the past where, you know, we've run into these issues, then I think we're falling into a bit of a trap in this new sort of identity paradigm. Similarly, you know, I think with regards to resources like schemas and status lists, single points of failure is also a really big potential issue in the space. I think we've seen a lot of convergence around did methods like did web, did TDW, which I'll get onto in a bit later in the presentation. But, you know, we've seen large global outages recently with regards to Microsoft. We've seen previous ones with Facebook. And I think if we're going to build an identity system around these types of resources, we should try and mitigate as much as possible single points of failure. Thirdly, a lot of resources that are currently stored are on kind of centralized cloud infrastructure. So this graph on the left here shows that, you know, most of what is stored on servers around the world is actually narrowly around 3 or 4 cloud infrastructure providers, which makes global outages or systematic outages a lot more common. If, say, a big provider like AWS goes down, it could take down a lot of a potential system. And then finally, there's this concept of link rot, which we talk about a lot, which is, and if I go back to the example of the schema analogy, which I showed previously, we need to make sure that, you know, if we have a driver's license, which potentially has a lifespan of, you know, 30, 40 years, we need to make sure that a schema that was issued 30, 40 years ago doesn't, that the link for that schema doesn't break, you know, a long way down the track. This diagram on the left here shows that, and I can't remember the date, I think it was since the late 90s, 47.7% of all links on the internet have now died. And if we don't look at that as an issue when we're building these sort of identity credentials with longevity, then we'll run into similar sort of issues with resolving to these resources going forward. Another issue I think that I touched on slightly earlier is we are converging around some, I would say, more centralized methods. I don't have a problem with this at all, but I think we should be mindful of some of the potential implications of this. So with DidWeb specifically, you know, I think many of us on the call are aware of the challenges of it. But it is also a very simplistic and easy to use DID method. But yes, if a hosting provider is hacked or goes down, that could potentially affect the identity system. And DID TDW, you know, goes some of the way to solve those problems. But, you know, if you can't access the DID log file and, you know, the historic sort of records of the DID itself, then you might run into similar challenges as well. But I don't want to go into detail on did TDW or did web in this call. That's not the point of it. So yeah, resources, did linked resources, just to summarize, are a way of mitigating some of the risks of this sort of downtime on these critical components of the credential and identity ecosystems that we are currently all sort of rapidly getting ourselves involved in. I'm actually going to do this section after. I'll go straight into it now. So, how are resources being used in the wild? So I touched on some examples of where resources could be used. So schemas, status lists, trust registries. Since we actually launched the specification or started writing the specification 2 years ago, we've been working on a couple of initiatives and, you know, we've had a lot of community members working on initiatives for resources. So recently, DIF and DanubeTech, DanubeTech has been commissioned to build DidLinked resources into both the Universal Registrar and the Universal Resolver. And what that actually means is that anyone who's using some of these common interfaces to create decentralized identifiers or DIDs should equally be able to create DID-linked resources and resolve to DID-linked resources. This is in zero way linked to Checked. This is something that we worked on, but the whole point of doing this in W3C and with diff is to make sure that any DID method is able to use DID linked resources, and you know, any verifier application should be able to resolve DID linked resources, notwithstanding the actual ledger or DID method being used under the hood. And we want to create a sort of common syntax for these types of resources, which yeah, can be used with DID web, could be used with DID EBSI, DID Indie, DID checked, whatever. And we hope that some of this work on DID linked resources as well will be considered as part of the new DID traits work. So yeah, point one is we're working to get this into the universal resolver and registrar. Point two is there's been a lot of really interesting work on DID linked resources for trust registries lately. We've been working with the guys at EBSI, and we've been working at the guys at the Fraunhofer Institute to create very much a end-to-end journey for writing sort of trust registries and verifying trust registries in a very modular way. Where we use trust registry, where we use DID linked resources in the trust registry piece is in this, this purple blob that's on the screen here. So, each trust registry entry or each, I'll contextualize this a little bit. So checked, what we've been doing at checked is working with the EBSI model of trust registries. And what that means is a DID can accredit another DID with a specific set of permissions. So there could be a root of trust governance authority DID, which says, okay, I want to accredit these, you know, accreditation organizations to issue either more accreditations or to issue credentials. And those accreditations themselves are stored as DID linked resources. So basically the parent DID or the root of trust DID issues their accreditations as DID linked resources to the accreditors, and then they can issue accreditations to issuers, and those are stored as DID linked resources as well. I'll go into more detail further in the presentation on how this actually works to build a bit of a, to paint a bit of a clearer picture on what I mean when I say linked resources to these DIDs. But in essence, this is one of the use cases that we're looking at. And it's really cool because what we can actually do is have trusted accreditations, which secure and use the same key material that are in the DIDs that are, that they're being linked to write trust registries, which is excellent. And the guys at the Fraunhofer Institute have built this trust shape train trust validator, that's a bit of a mouthful, where basically they're building a modular way to resolve different trust registry implementations. So they're looking at doing X509 and more centralized trust registry models, as well as OpenID federation and also DID-based trust registry resolution. So they kind of want to build this as almost like the universal resolver for trust registries, which I think is a really interesting piece of work. I touched on this as well, but we made an EBSI improvement proposal. So they are now looking to support DID linked resources for their schemas, status lists, and trust registries on the EBSI ledger. So for example, they have this concept of trust chains at EBSI, whereby, as I kind of alluded to earlier, an organization can accredit another organization below it with a set of permissions. And if you write those accreditations as DID linked resources, then it becomes much easier to resolve to that accreditation in a standardized and sort of clearly defined data model. So this diagram on the right is sort of what we intend to, is sort of a longer-term goal that we intend to reach with EBSI or perhaps what becomes European down the line, whereby we can have DIDs and DID-linked trust registries or DID-linked status lists written on EBSI and then other trust infrastructure such as ourselves at checked. And then we use the universal registrar and resolver to be able to like it, with complete interoperability, take those inputs and for verifier applications to be able to verify those trust registries equally, which I think would be a really, really nice sort of demo to do with them at EPSI. Another use that we've seen pop up in the last couple of years is diddlink resources for Anon creds. So historically, Anon creds have been tied at the hip to Hyperledger Indy, and that's obviously caused a lot of friction in this space. It's caused a lot of challenges with people building in the Anon creds world. And one of the things we were able to do with linked resources was actually enable the Anon creds community to decouple the Anon creds credential format from Hyperledger Indy. Now, I'm not advocating that we all move to Anon creds in any capacity. I actually love, you know, that we're all converging around SDJOT and the other EU sort of credential formats, but it's a really cool sort of innovation where we were able to replicate a lot of the specific Indy sort of schemas, credential definitions, revocation status lists using this kind of extensible diddlink resource format. And then finally, one of the things that we've been working on Checked is supporting status lists as diddlink resources. So we currently support ledger-based status list 21, bitstring status list, token status lists. So essentially, it's any file can be stored as a linked resource, and it appears in this common syntax, which I'll go into a bit more detail on a bit further in the presentation. But what's really cool is resolvers can essentially resolve to these status lists using a DID URL and fetch the credential status from the status list themselves. Awesome. So yeah, just quick summary of DIDs in the wild. Oh, sorry, DLRs in the wild, which is the acronym for diddlink resources. So it's W3C draft spec in process. The universal registrar and resolver is in progress. Anon creds has been done, which is awesome. EPSI is in progress. Status lists have been done and trust registries have been done. So lots of really, really good work in terms of standardizing how these different types of resources are stored and retrieved. I'm actually going, because I think it's quite important to explain like how these resources work. I think that's probably a really good next sort of step to sort of explain. I'm just checking in the background if Anchor's joined as well. Yes, I can see him on the call. Hello, Anchor. awesome. So just to give a bit of context to diddlink resources and how they work, it all starts with a DID. So you create your DID like you would usually. I'm using a checked DID as an example, but it could be any DID. And with that DID, you have a set of keys that are used to control the DID, to update the DID, to authenticate the DID, etc. So you start with a really basic DID. And these bits that are highlighted in orange and in green are important for the next slide. So I'll show you how these pieces work in the next slide. So the unique identifier of the DID essentially becomes what we call a collection ID. So I like to think of the DID as the parent, and then the resources are basically children within a collection that's associated with the parent DID. And each of the resources has its own unique resource ID, and it can have its own resource name, resource type, which sort of is metadata that defines what the resource is. And then you can pass an actual file with the transaction that is your actual resource. So this could be a schema, this could be a status list, etc. And then the metadata here is essentially giving context and an identifier to that resource itself. Now, importantly, when you create the resource, you sign the transaction with the same verification method keys that are in your DID document. So, you know, all of the, you know, the benefits of having DIDs and multiple controllers and multiple, and, you know, keys for different purposes in the DID document, you can use the, you can use those same concepts when you're using DID linked resources. So you could have a, you could have it so all controllers of the DID need to sign the transaction to create a DID linked resource. So that this DID linked resource is now essentially cryptographically secure because it's being created using the same keys as the DID, or at least you can prove that the resource has, you know, is controlled by the DID or is at least, you know, related to the DID. And then once you've created that resource in the DID document metadata, we populate essentially resource metadata. So, or linked resource metadata, whereby you can see the resource name, you can see the resource type, you can see the unique identifier for the resource. And just as a quick sort of, kind of like diagram of how this works in completion, you have your DID, you have your keys, and then you know, the unique ID of the DID identifies the collection, and you can have one resource within the collection, or you can have, you know, multiple resources within the collection. And what's nice with the design of DID linked resources is you can have versions of resources sequentially ordered and, you know, fully indexable. And we've proposed that we do this using the same resource name and resource type. So if you create a new resource and you give it the same name and type, that will become essentially a new version of the same resource. All resources have their own unique identifier, but they are grouped into collections of the same resource name and resource type. And what's great is once you've created your resources, in the same way that a DID is discoverable through DID resolution, your resource is discoverable through DID URL dereferencing or essentially DID resolution as well. So there is path-based dereferencing. So you can have slash resources. So you have your DID, then slash resources, and then the unique sort of specific resource ID for that resource, and that will fetch the actual file. Or you can create query syntax. So you can say, I want to query this collection, and I want to ask for the resource name that is university degree and the resource type, which is JSON schema. And you can add extra queries to this, and we've defined all the particular queries within the draft spec. So you can say, I want to query the resource at a particular version time. So you can say, I want to get this particular resource of this name and this type at this particular point in time. Which is really, really cool because going back to the beginning of the presentation, when I was explaining that you need to be able to persist historical resources such as schemas, which, you know, might have a very long lifespan, using DID URLs like this, especially when coupled with ledger-based DID methods or more persistently stored DID methods, you can actually fetch that file with immutability and persistence going forward. And what's neat about resources is the syntax. If you use the common syntax, it doesn't actually matter where the resource is stored. So, you know, obviously checked is a blockchain. It's one way of storing resources, and there are benefits of that in terms of immutability and persistence. But equally, you could store DID linked resources, on a web server attached to a DID web DID. And it's just a common way of referencing things like, you know, your status lists and your schemas, and your trust registries related to that DID. Equally, you know, you could use IPFS, you could use things like Keri. The actual places you store them are, very broad or, you know, potentially limitless. And then before I wrap up as well, I think it's probably just worth touching finally on some of the other applications of resources that we've not seen be used yet, but I think could be really, really cool. One is visual representations of credentials. So in the same way that, you know, you have schemas for the essentially the attributes of a credential or the composition of a credential, you could also have a resource, Didlinked resource, which, you know, takes the actual visual schema of a credential. You know, you could store OCA bundles as Didlinked resources. So, you know, any verifier application had a common way of actually finding the OCA bundle and then presenting the visual credential in the format that was intended by the issuer. I also think that there is a interesting angle around supply chains here. You know, if you have DIDs for each organization along a supply chain, then you can associate files with that DID for, you know, particular parts of that supply chain as it goes through, whether it's for schemas, whether even if it's for things like storing little bits of information about, okay, yes, this part of the supply chain has been certified, and I can store that as a Didlinked resource so that I know that that file has been signed by the keys of the controller of that DID. So yeah, we're really excited by the standard because we're now seeing a lot of innovation in the space around it. And to everyone in the community who I'm speaking to now, it would be great to get you all to read the draft spec and get your comments on it. Obviously, I'm going to pause here for questions, and I might pass over to Anchor as well. If you've got anything to add to this, Anchor, probably a good time for you to come in now as well.
No, I'm just curious to answer any questions that people might have. Obviously, we've got some comments through on GitHub issues. I'm curious to go and answer those, especially since there's not just us, but a lot of people building using the Didlinked resources spec.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Alex, for a great presentation. Dimitri, you're in the queue.
Just first of all, thank you for the presentation. I had a quick question. What does checked ledger use on the back end? Is it Hyperledger based?
No, it uses Cosmos SDK. But because we were looking at supporting Anon creds on our network, one of the ways we wanted to go and solve how we look at cred dev schemas, et cetera, was one of the reasons why we looked at it. But we run Cosmos SDK.
Cosmos, thank you.
MG, please.
Hello, everyone. It's so here. I'm so glad to be with you today. I'm MG from Go Plausible. Very happy to meet you all online. And I have just one question. I mentioned my comments as a here as an issue over GitHub, but very rapidly, I just wanted you, if possibly, shed some light on what are the plans to, you know, expand a little bit more or extend the proposal draft, and also if there is some possible room for collaborations and suggest some new stuff, as I mentioned over my issue on GitHub. And if you guys see fit, I can somehow elaborate on that a little bit more. Thank you.
No, that's honestly very glad to hear that, and would absolutely love for more contributors to the standard. For people who haven't seen this, this was an issue raised by MG on the GitHub for Didlinked resources. And like just to cover off in brief, I think some of the issues that you've highlighted on it are because the language of the draft currently refers to the implementation that Checked has. So just one example of that is the...
Sorry, Ankur, I think we lost you for a little bit.
Sorry, I think I got disconnected there for a second. So one of the issues, for example, that you raised within that post is, should it just be UUIDs that get used for unique resource identifiers? It doesn't have to be. And I think the language within the current draft specification is confusing. I think similar to how DID identifiers or unique identifiers can be defined by the method itself, we believe that for D-Link resources, you can go and define the resource identifier method. Similarly, you'd ask some questions around whether there's any cryptographic verification used. So in our case, because every single update is signed by the controllers, one or more, for example, in our case, of a DID document, there could be similar measures that are implemented. If you like a single controller, single verification method, DID method, then you can stick with that. If you don't, then you can stick with other sort of like, you know, areas. So just in summary, like very happy to have like, you know, people come and make suggestions. This is just an opener so that we have something on paper, and anything that we can go and do to improve it, that is fantastic news.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time and response.
No, thank you for the question and for the GitHub issue as well. I do have a draft on to say, hopefully I can post that as well.
Surely, and I will make sure to implement as soon as possible to implement the link resources right into the implementation of VIDs and verifiable credentials on Algorand blockchain, as GoPlausible is the entity who implements these on Algorand blockchain. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Billa, you're next, Nick.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry, I think I accidentally muted you. Sorry. Billa, please.
Okay, thank you, Phil. For most of you don't know me, hello. For those of you who don't, I'm with GS1. I wanted to listen to this presentation today because it piqued interest. So thank you to Alex and Anka. I'm new to this, so I'm struggling to understand the difference between DID link resources, service endpoints in a DID doc, which I guess this must be a difference, otherwise you wouldn't be doing this. But I'm intrigued at the idea of a root of trust DID that then links DIDs that flow beneath that. That's very relevant to trust anchors in supply chains, which is what we do with the Barco people. We're a federation. We have 118 bits of GS1 around the world that issue our identifiers. I know you hate issued identifiers, but it pays my mortgage. Sorry. So I'm looking at a way that we at Global Office would give those identifiers to our member organizations, and then they then cascade them down to the individual organizations. So could you tell me a bit about the
Yep, I can pick up that question. I think I'm connected now. Can you hear me?
Yes. Sorry, we have a little service disruption. I think it's probably because the sharing of the document is too big. So,
thank you so much. Thank you so much for that question. Actually, I am aware of GS1. I think I met with one of your colleagues from EECC, which is a subsidiary of GS1, Sebastian Miller, who sort of like, you know, is familiar with some of this. So to answer the first question.
It's a subsidiary of GS1 Germany, which is, you know, Germany. This is the thing. We're 119 different legal entities and we're all different. Yeah. And we're all called GS1. It's really annoying. Yeah. I know. Sorry.
So he's probably a great person to connect with because he might have some context on this. But to answer your first question, why did we not do this within the service section of the DID document? That's fantastic because our initial instinct was indeed to go with the service section. But as we spent some time talking about this with people at Trust Over IP, people at DAIF, people at W3C, the answer that sort of like, you know, came out from that is service sections are meant to be for services. They're meant to be for APIs. They are not semantically supposed to point towards just a file that could be an image file that you want to use to display when you show the credential, or just to link to a schema. And because currently when people use service sections, they use it to quite often to point towards API endpoints, let's say for where the agent DIDCOM might be established, or some kind of service negotiation. So that's the reason why we try to semantically stay away from it. Putting it into the service section would cause some challenges. Secondly, looking into the core properties of the service section itself, it defines the service endpoint type and ID, but we felt there would be some additional elements that could be quite useful, like version and resource. And we tried to not touch the core properties themselves, purely because for a lot of software libraries that are written to process DID documents, if you change the core properties either, say, within a section like service itself, or you add like a top-level property to a DID document that is non-standard and not defined in DID core, they would either just crash, ignore it, or not understand how to process it. Because for a lot of software, the structure of the DID core sections are the ones that are strongly typed. So instead, for all of those challenges, we settled on this concept of DID link resources, which is it could be any file. We don't necessarily want to go and restrict that, but to have a level of control, to be able to publish that file, you need to sign off with the controller DIDs. And I think in the GS1 context, where this could apply is, as you said, like, you know, there's GS1 as a top level, and then let's say you have 190 subsidiaries. You could have a DID linked resource that defines, is linked to, say, GS1 Global's DID document that then goes and awards DID linked resources as verifiable accreditations to each of the 190 subsidiaries. And then each of those 190 subsidiaries, like GS1 Germany, could go and issue verifiable accreditations to things like EECC. And being able to then resolve and traverse through all of that in a fashion that, like, you know, is permanently sort of like accessible on chain and version controlled, I think is where things become quite interesting. Also, because the verifiable accreditation is just a credential, you can also go and revoke them the same way that you might revoke a credential. So somebody could be able to prove that when they were issued, say, a credential from a trusted body, it was a trusted body at that point in time, because you can resolve to the root of trust documents at that point and date and time. But then still be able to understand that it's currently not valid because it's been revoked.
Yeah, just one more point on that as well. One of the things that we've been working on as well is to say, yes, GS1 could have like a DID, which is their root of trust, but they could also store that DID or associate it with an X509 certificate or DNS record for GS1 for the root of trust. And then once that root of trust DID has been sort of established, that has a higher level of assurance. And then you could create the cascade of regular DIDs below that, all sort of wrapping up back into that higher level of assurance DID. I think that's a really interesting hybrid model, because you have a lot more flexibility when you create DIDs. You can make them domain specific. You can make them, you know, you can tweak what the permissions are within the accreditations. They have a lot more flexibility than you do with just X509 certificates. So I think, yeah, it's an interesting approach that we're currently building with the guys at Fraunhofer.
So thank you both. That's really interesting and definitely something we need to look at. And I'm glad I joined the call today. Thank you.
Dimitri.
My question is to sort of follow up on the trust registry angle is I'm wondering why the decision to overload the just the storage spec with also issuer registry section, right? Like there's a number of issuer registry specifications like train, like CCGs, known issuers and verifiers, like OpenID Federation, all that stuff. why connect it to a fairly narrowly scoped bid relative resources?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the main differentiator that we find with overloading it into the D-Link resources is version control and being able to keep a historical record of what that root of trust sort of chain of documents might have been over time. If you think of the train approach using DNS records, DNS records are like point in time. Like you go and resolve them. There is some level of DNS caching, which is great if you only need to resolve and traverse through the root of trust chain at the current point in time. But if you think about the longevity of digital credentials, a typical passport is issued with a 10-year validity timeline. You might struggle to go and resolve to what that DNS record for the root of trust was at 5 years ago in the future. So I think that is one of the key reasons why we went and overloaded this, not just for things like schemas, where we also think, like, you know, there's a lot of evolution that happens over time, but also for root of trust documents, because they might also evolve over time. And you might also, as a holder of a credential, want to prove that a certain credential that you hold now was issued by, let's say, a trusted company that used to exist 5 years ago, but is no longer authorized to issue that, maybe because they had their trusted accreditation removed, or they don't exist anymore, or they have gone through a merger with a different company. And so all of those are examples of looking at the longevity of credentials. We wanted to go and tackle to say, if there was a way of, like, you know, having a decentralized and distributed way of recording that information, and then using the standard logic that is defined in the DID core spec using queries to go resolve that, then it perhaps addresses some of those challenges. Hope that answers your question.
It does partly. The bit that I'm not super clear about is, I understand why versioning of any resources is useful in general, and I understand why versioning issuer registries is useful. The bit I'm not clear on is why combine it in the DID linked resources specification, right? If I want to use DID linked resources to version my Word document, for example, right? I wouldn't put that in the spec.
Yeah, fair. I think we wanted to give examples of what could be done with DID linked resources, because I think at the beginning, people were a bit confused about, is this just for schemas? Is this just for cred devs? Is it just for the way we go and implement anon creds? So I think mentioning it in the spec is more to go and explain, like, look, there's a range of possibilities here in how it could be used. And I know you've done some work with how could a credential be displayed. So, for example, if there's a CSS style sheet or any image assets that you're using for the way to go and display a credential within a wallet, we think those are also very interesting examples of something that could be specified as a D-Link resource rather than a centralized URL that can have link rot.
Makes sense.
Also, it's worth noting that in the spec itself, it doesn't go into detail on trust registries at all. It's very generic. The trust registry stuff was very much just for this presentation and for contextualizing what you could do with it.
Understood. Okay, got it.
Yeah, thanks, Dimitri, for the questions, because I have the same questions. And thanks, Ankur, for a great explanation. Lucy, please.
Thank you, Harrison. I just want to quickly respond to the versioning am part of the conversation. I'm not technical in any way, but my project has been using Train for some time. So one of the functionalities we are working with Fraunhofer is on having versioning. So that I can't dive into it. I just want a comment here. I'm happy to go back to our technical team and learn more and see also like if they can share a little bit something of how, you know, we're approaching versioning, but I just want to make a note that we are using Train and also based on our conversation with Fraunhofer, it is definitely possible to use Train and still have the versioning functionality, which is very important.
So. Yep. No, thanks for that addition, Lucy. And, we've also been, working and chatting with the Fraunhofer team. I think we wanted to have multiple approaches available for that same version. I think one of them might actually be the discussion that they're having with us.
Okay, great. I'm not saying a multiple approach is not good. I just want to make a comment. we are also working on that. So good that,
yeah. Thank you.
And multiple approaches is good. Like there's never going to be one approach that pulls them all. That's not what we're trying to get to. I think we want to have interoperable architecture that can result to different ways of doing things, whether it's something like OpenID Federation or diddling for resources or potentially the way that you're doing things. I think all will have merits, all will be useful in their own particular context. So yeah, I think there possibly is a way they could overlap, but if there's not, then there's probably still merit in both. Cool. Sorry. Anyone
who any other questions?
Hand up next? Yeah.
I got a quick question. So, I think, again, great presentations. And then, thank you for, having the concrete examples on, kind of the root of trust and chain of trust, example. I'm just curious, what about the schema, use cases? Do you have, examples on how different companies, use the schema, link resources for schemas?
We've put together a few examples of schemas. I mean, it's basically the actual file being stored as a linked resource, and then in the credential itself, you just either include a DID URL or you can even include the resolver link if you want to as well. We haven't had a big project yet where we're using lots of schemas. I still think there's obviously, I don't think we're going to stop schema.org doing their stuff anytime soon, but I think it's a good option for those that want to have, ensure that a particular schema is stored persistently. And then you can cross link it as well with something on schema.org. So you could have in our did link resource spec, we also have an also known as property. So you could have a did link resource and then have an also known as link to a schema.org schema, and cross sort of link between the two of them. Anchor, anything else to add on that?
No, not really. I think in practical terms, the example that we gave at the beginning where a driver's license, a sort of example where 10 years ago it looked something different in terms of the data schema from what it looks like now is, I think, a fantastic example of where schemas, which are very crucial to how a credential gets processed, should ideally be stored in a decentralized or distributed fashion, and then making it resolvable in sort of terms that we are already familiar with how service queries are done on DID URLs, is I think a great example.
Thank you, Dimitri.
This is less of a question and more, it might be interesting, for the linked data folks, the DID relative, resources folks. So the topic of, account relative resources, is becoming really important in the area of decentralized social media. So Mastodon, and the rest of the Fediverse, for those of you who are familiar with that. And so one of the main topics of interest there is account portability. How do you, when switching service providers, not break the links? And so one of the proposals that I and some other people worked on was specifically to use DID relative URLs for storing posts, right? Like storing Mastodon posts. Except we were using the DID core relative ref mechanism. Here I'll post the spec in the chat. Because that was already in the DID core spec, but I think it would be interesting to take a look at your specification to see if that's a better fit for the decentralized social media model. Thanks all.
That's a great recommendation. Sorry, I see you've posted a link in the chat as well. So thanks for that heads up. Like, we'll look into that as well. Who's the best person to connect about it? Is it yourself, Dimitri?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, Dimitri heads the social web group, so he's definitely the best person.
Yeah.
All right. Any last questions? We have 1 minute left. Great. Thank you. Thanks, Ankur. Thanks, Alex, for jumping on and host a great presentation and great Q&A session. So thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
All right, this concludes this week's CCG meeting. Thanks a lot.